Welcome to Booktopia on Harry Potter. Today we're going to discuss all things Harry Potter, from the 20th anniversary to what our favourite books are and why Harry Potter has meant so much to so many people. My name is Bronwyn and I'm here with Emily and Tracy.
Hi.
Say hi.
Hey. Everyone.
All right, so I think what prompted this, everyone, was that we had on Monday 20 years of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, and we basically had a massive Harry Potter day at work. I basically did nothing but Harry Potter all over social media, and I just was seeing all the hype, and I thought it was a really good topic that we should talk about, you know, because Harry Potter has meant so much to so many people and in different ways. And yeah, I just thought we'd have a chat about that. So what do you think, ladies? What do you think about Harry Potter?
Hard to believe how much Harry Potter has changed the world and how much hype there is. You know, 20 years ago, I remember sitting in a staff meeting because I was working in a bookstore at the time, and the owner saying, "Oh, there's this little book coming out of the UK, Harry Potter. I don't know if it's going to do very well, but maybe if some of you want to have a read and see what you think." Because at that stage, it didn't even have a distributor here in Australia. So this is before the Harry Potter hype. And I can remember picking up that first book and just being transported back to childhood, to the adventure and the magic and the hope and possibility that you sort of tend to lose a bit as you get older.
I love having that perspective here, because when it came out, I was five. You know, so I didn't... For me, it has always been there.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was sort of first introduced to it, you know, reading I think I read the first book because the movie was coming out, and I wasn't a massive reader, but Mum gave me this book and I absolutely loved it. And Mum to this day says, "I thank J.K. Rowling because she got my kids into reading." And you know, here we are 20 years later and I now work in the book industry, and you know, a lot of that would be to do but started with Harry Potter, really. Yeah. When you think about it,
I think most people our age would have that experience. I was one of the early ones before Harry Potter was a movie. Like, by the time the movie came out, I had read all the books that had been released by that point. But it's how I learned to read as well. And my parents would sit there every night and we would take turns reading the pages until I was like 8 years old, when I went, "I don't want to read this with you anymore. I just want to read it for myself."
Yeah,
pretty much. I got tired of waiting for everyone to catch up. And I remember I have very distinct memories of being in Chile at the time. Mm-hmm. And I had Prisoner of Azkaban with me, and I would read, I was eight, and I would be reading it every night when I'd be homesick. That's what I would turn to while I was over there. And when I came back, I had Goblet of Fire waiting for me as my belated Christmas present.
Yeah.
To my auntie.
It was such a frenzy, I think, for people our age. And in the high schools, like when the other, you know, the later books were coming out and I was in high school, and you just would see, it would be one of those things where you would walk around and everybody was reading Harry Potter. And it was a competition to see who could finish it first, because you were so afraid that someone would spoil it for you.
The hype, that like, big. Working in the bookstores while this was all going on, and, you know, you would get the books in, they're under really strict embargo. You weren't allowed to even touch the boxes. Yeah. And then as release time would come around, because it's 9:01 a.m. every time, pulling all the boxes to the front of the store and not even being able to unpack them. People were just streaming through the door and you're just handing them out to people. And people were buying multiple copies just because they couldn't wait for someone else to read it. You'd see kids lying around all through the bookstore, not even being able to get to the counter to pay for the book before they're having to open it and read it. And these are like, some of, particularly towards the end, the books are huge. And I think it was a very big change in kids publishing. The length of the books and the depth of the books and some of the themes of the books are quite dark.
Absolutely. And I think for people me, because we grew up with them, so it sort of matured with us, but the kids are reading it today at a very young age, something that I would probably consider a little dark, you know, for kids that age, but they love it so much, and because of the hype, it's become just this accepted thing and they know how magical it is and they don't want to wait. You know, they don't have to wait either.
That's the beauty of kids' books. You can explore themes in a way that's non-threatening. So death and destruction, like you wouldn't put a serial killer normally into a kid's book, but that's what we have with Voldemort and in the J.K.
child, Rowling, nonetheless,
world. It's acceptable because it's magical and it's sort of, it's unreal, so kids can process it better than
I think that's what's great about that genre, is it's even though it's going on themes that happen in today's society, it feels a little detached because there's magic and it's a fantasy space. And it's a safe space. It's almost, it's not as confronting in a way, but especially for children, because I find that children don't necessarily always pick up on the heaviness of it as much as the adults do. And I know that I'll go back and look at things now as an adult that I saw as a child or read as a child, and I'll go, wow, I didn't, that's heavy.
Yeah.
But I didn't pick it up. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's great. That's why you can read these kinds of books again and again.
Yeah.
As a child, as a teenager, as an adult, that kind of thing. And just get completely different experience when you, you know, reread them.
Yeah, even like I'm listening to the amazing Stephen Fry reading Order of the Phoenix at the moment, and it's just engrossing. I just don't want to do anything other than lie there and sort of listen to him read it, because he's doing all the voices. And
he would bring his own interpretation to everything as well, which would just be a whole new experience.
And it's such a lovely way of re-experiencing the books again, because I don't know about you guys, but I loved reading, being read to as a kid, and I actually love reading to children still. And this is another way as an adult to experience that same, the same experience, just in a different way. Just do it while you work, or while you drive, or while you walk. That it's so much fun.
Yeah. I've been really lucky that I've got a brother that's 10 years younger. So I actually got to experience Harry Potter for as long as I remember. Like, I don't remember a time that Harry Potter didn't exist in my life. But then I got to experience it as a teenager and as an adult sharing it with someone who was going through it for the first time. So I remember, like, my brother didn't even exist. My mom was pregnant when the first film came out. And I was super disgruntled because everybody was suddenly all about Harry Potter, where I had been for years before that.
So you were like, finally catching up, everybody. Like, how could you not realize
I wasn't even, like, catching up. I was like, this was my thing. And
no, they were catching up to you, is what I mean.
Now you want my thing. but my parents let me take the day off school to That's go so see cool. the film. And they made it a really big experience because it had been such a family thing for us that I had read it with them, and then I had taken my own journey with it, and by that stage my whole room was just Harry Potter, Harry Potter. I had Harry Potter birthday party that year. I went dressed as Harry Potter. I had dreams of being 11 years old and receiving my Hogwarts letter.
I think every kid might have done that.
Many times. Well, my nephew's about to turn 11 in just over about two months from now, and so I've bought him the complete hardcover set of Harry Potter, and I'm really looking forward to doing that up and making it special for him. And he's already been exposed to the Harry Potter universe to a certain extent, because I bought the illustrated editions of the first two titles. The third one's coming out later this year, and we've been reading that, and he's also seen the movies. But the number of times he says to me, but that's not what it was like in the movie as we're reading through the books. And I just can't wait for him to actually read the books and experience the greater depth of the story than
so much more in the books
that can show in the movies. And I'm really excited for him to see him sort of hopefully embrace Harry Potter the way I did.
Well, that's what I love about it, because it's already endured for 20 years. And I was thinking about it the other day. Eventually, when I have kids, I would love to introduce them to it. And I feel like it will be one of those stories that will endure forever.
Yeah.
You know, it will become a classic, like a children's classic. And because it has literally made an impact. You say Harry Potter to any random person on the street, they might not necessarily like it, but they know it. And they understand the gravity of it and how much it means to so many people. I mean, you know, like that, take John upstairs, for example. Like, he doesn't really like Harry Potter. He openly admits that, everybody. He does not like Harry Potter, but he understands its importance, and he cherishes it as a brand, because he, you know, he values it as a bookseller. And he values it in that he understands how much it's meant to so many different people, and what a great positive influence it's been on the world.
It's gotten kids reading, and gotten adults reading as well, because, you know, I remember adults when it first came out and they brought out the adult covers as well, so that adults weren't afraid to be sitting on the train reading it.
The kids' book,
But, like, you would see everyone on the train reading the books. I've never, ever experienced anything like it. I don't think we ever will again.
I can't think of a single other story, book, maybe nothing, that has made such a massive, lasting impact.
But I don't think necessarily what she's written was anything new. I think she combined, I used to read a lot of Enid Blyton when I was a child, like the Faraway Tree and like the Secret Seven, the Famous Five. Kind of combined what I loved about both of those series and put them all into one. So you had the magic, but you also had the adventure and that element of danger and that element of self-discovery, which Harry, Ron and Hermione all go on quite a journey through the course of the books, and you see them grow up. And I think that part of that was really important to the whole overall storyline, why so many people jumped on it, because as they were reading it, and every time a new book came out, they were just growing that a little bit more. So it's not like the first book was just intended for 11-year-olds. It grew with the readership, which most series don't tend to do in the same way.
No, they don't.
And even then, like, you think about how much the world has changed in 20 years. And because it does take you into this magical world, the fact that there is no Twitter, there is no social media, there is no mobile phones or anything else is irrelevant to the story, because it's timeless.
Yeah.
It really in so many ways.
Because you do feel like you are in a completely different world. But, even though
you're in England.
Right. Yeah, but you don't feel like you are. You feel like you're at Hogwarts, and it's a completely unique place, even when Harry is at home.
Yeah.
Well, home, inverted commas, not really. When he's with the Dursleys, like, you still feel, it doesn't feel modern day. Do you know what I mean?
No.
Even though it's 20 years ago now, it doesn't feel in this world in a way. So you feel safe. You feel like you don't have to worry about the problems of this world, because you're just worrying about what's going on in Harry's world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you look at how it's captured both adults and kids. You know, how many other book series would you have people getting sorted on Pottermore and proudly displaying their house, which house they're in, etc.?
I remember walking around uni and seeing, you know, people running around the field with broomsticks between their legs playing Quidditch. And I was like, you know what? You go. Like, that is so much fun. And people don't care as well, because it's been embraced. And people understand the obsession.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no judgment for adults who love it. There's almost like an encouragement. It's like, it's not just for kids. Yeah. Please read it. Please read it. It's amazing. Or at least watch the movies.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that's...
Yeah. And with the 20th anniversary, I think it's pushing people, even people that haven't read it, to start picking up the books and thinking about it.
It's never too late to go to Hogwarts.
You know, I mean, the number of staff here that have bought multiple copies of the different house editions, because you know,
well, Tanea has in upstairs, she has so many copies of the books, and she's got the newest editions of the first book in the house colors, all of them, and they're so beautiful, and how they look like the scarves in the, you know, along the page
and
edges,
and proper color accurate representations. It's none of this, you know, I mean, the merchandise you can get from other places is great, but the books actually represent the original house colours like they're described in the book. They're not the ones that merchandisers that went, oh, we can really capitalise on this and sell scarves and things and slightly tweak those colours so that each was unique.
Yeah.
They're actually really well represented. I mean, I was looking at my book set the other day. My sister asked if she could borrow a couple of them for her Bookstagram page to take some photos, because I have the original set sitting in my room, and I refuse to let anyone else have them because they were mine first.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they want them, they can go buy their own. But they've been read so many times, my books are actually falling apart, and they've all got the original release day covers, because I would be there at the bookshop for the 901 embargo. I would be lined up, and you know, it'd be a thing with my mum where we would be out of the house, you're there for 8:30, you're lining up, you're in the queue, you get the book. And no, we didn't do the dress up part, which is actually really disappointing in hindsight. I really wish I had.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would, like, I cannot read in the car and not get motion sickness, but Harry Potter was somehow the exception. And we'd be driving, like, it would be a 10-minute drive home. It wasn't even that. And I was like, no, I'm not waiting. This has to start right now.
Yeah, try being a bookseller who has to wait to the end of this shift to actually start pick it up. And
read and serve.
And particularly when you know it's been there for sitting there in the boxes for a few days beforehand. It's like torture. So absolute torture.
Man. When it might have been the fifth book. I can't remember if it was the fifth or the sixth book came out, and I was in high school, and my friend ran and I went on, we had these tickets, and we went on this old steam train. Completely dressed up. It started in Central. I can't remember where we went. We went to a little Hogsmeade place and spent the day like having fun activities. And you know, on the train they had a woman coming around with the trolley. And there was a massive snake wrapped around me. It was just so exciting to dress up and do all that. And then we got the book when we were at Hogsmeade. And so on the train trip back, everyone was dead silent. I'm not even exaggerating. It was dead silent. Everyone was just reading that book, and I'm a very slow reader, so I was like looking at other people going, no, they're way ahead of me, and it becomes this thing, you know?
It does, and it reaches the point now where I think a lot of people our age, and even people like Tracy, there are so many different versions of the books available now.
They're getting more creative, though.
And like, there's a dozen, you can't get the original covers anymore, but there's like a dozen different other versions of covers you can get, and
I own like
boxes.
4 or 5 copies of The Philosopher's Stone now.
I'm probably going to add another one if I buy the paperback.
I'm almost like ready to buy a reading set just so I can have a set that I can read, and I can have my originals on display. That way they don't get damaged anymore.
You should probably put them in a sealed glass.
I'm contemplating it. If anyone knows anywhere I can get this set up,
Google it. It'll be there. Trust me.
Someone's going to have a great setup for this, but yes.
My original set are in storage. I'm hoping I can unpack them this weekend, because I really just,
But you can imagine it, literally, 100 years from now, they'll be in a museum. Someone will have sold their original copy, and those very, very old, very sad-looking Harry Potter books will be in a museum, because it will be, it's just one of those massive, massive points in history.
I just wonder if, you know, whatever happens in the future, if somehow that, because so many were printed, somehow the Harry Potter books end up being the only record of our time left.
Oh, and my God. That's what happened.
They were magical wizards.
That would be great.
Wouldn't that completely distort history?
But then, too, what's good is if she's kind of continued to expand some of that universe with Fantastic Beasts and... you know, the movies, there's more movies to come, and there's a beautiful illustrated edition of Fantastic Beasts coming before Christmas time, which we are all like really excited about here in the office. So there'll be yet another Harry Potter book to add to my collection.
Yes. Earlier this year they reissued like Fantastic Beasts and put it to the ages. And again, I've got the originals at home that they released for charity.
Yeah.
That really... scrawny thin ones, but nonetheless you had them for your collection, and now they've re-released them with these really kid oriented covers. And I think as adults some of us were really disappointed. It was like, oh well, we're not gonna want that for our own personal collections, but we could give that to someone we know who's younger, who's just seen like Fantastic Beasts. And then we find out that they are finally doing what I know I personally was dreaming of having a Fantastic Beast with some beautiful illustrations and sketches of these creatures that weren't really explored in the book, but you still want to know about it because it's all part of that world building. And they finally came out and said, yep, it's coming. We have a date. It's in November sometime, I believe, October, November. And I was like, okay, well, we know it's at the top of my Christmas list now, because that's what we've wanted, really. Absolutely. You know, as much as you like Quidditch through the ages, Fantastic Beasts and seeing those graphics was...
just incredible. And
yeah.
I mean, I've got a copy of the very special edition of Tales of Beedle the Bard that comes in like a big oversized...
Oh, that is so pretty.
...leather-looking book. And then you open it up and there's a little jewelled, like, little hardcover, which is absolutely beautiful. I keep hoping she'll do something like that for Fantastic Beasts because that would be amazing, like...
Well, you never know. They keep coming out with new ones. And I think, I don't think anyone will ever get sick of it.
No.
Not us booksellers, at least, and not fans, because the more the merrier. Am I right? And I've been on social media this week, and particularly Instagram, there's just Harry Potter everywhere. And people are out and proud with it. You know, they are embracing their love for it. And all the different types of books that I've seen, the different versions that these people have... Mm. It's been really great because some people have the really old ones, some people have the new gorgeous ones, and then there's always been this mix. And, you know, people have those little bobblehead dolls, and they have their wands, and they put graphics to their videos. I saw this really fun one earlier, and, you know, people just, oh, they love it. And I think there's just this endless world that she's created. And I really like the fact that Fantastic Beasts was a book in the book. Like, yes. you could go anywhere because all the books were interesting. I wanted to be at Hogwarts in those classes. I was like, excuse me, why do I have to be here in math?
Yeah.
I don't care about us. I want to be learning Defense Against the Dark Arts.
Or flying on a broomstick.
I want to do netball. I want to fly on a broomstick, you know. I just think, everyone, I think, was just so jealous. I think that's what it came down to. Everyone was like, I want to be at Hogwarts. Yes. Hence the waiting for your letter that never came.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's with the illustrated edition of The Prisoner of Azkaban coming as well this year. That looks amazing. Because, I mean, it's not my favourite of all the books.
But it was mine.
Oh, really? I loved it,
but it definitely wasn't my favourite. But I'm really, really looking forward to seeing some of the illustrations because there's some really cool bits that happened in that book.
Finally see the illustrated version of Buckbeak.
Well, that's it. That's
flying scene.
Yes.
The night bus.
Oh, yes. That's on the cover at that.
Yes,
and absolutely. It's just so grand.
And the werewolf and all those kinds of beautiful scenes that came out of the movie, you know, you can imagine how they'll represent it in an illustrated version. I definitely loved that one. And the Wampin Willow and everything and the car,
it's going to be a really big one. I think this will potentially be the biggest one yet of the three of them because everyone just loves it so much. I don't know anyone who disliked Prisoner of Azkaban. Like, typically, if you ask someone what your least favourite Harry Potter book is, usually people lean towards Chamber of Secrets or...
Really?
Yeah, I find that, personally, in my experience, everyone I've spoken to
tends to... the Chamber, though, because I love the fact that, you know, learning about, like, the mystery of what is that noise and what's happening to everyone and then finding out that Harry had a bit of Slytherin in him in a way, you know, and you were like, oh, no. It was such a big moment. I remember being like, what's happening? But no, I think there's something about Prisoner of Azkaban. And the time travel.
Yeah, that's the time turn.
Anything time travel, I'm sold. Yeah. And I loved Meaning in Sirius Black.
Yeah, and I love Lupin. Lupin is one of the characters that I really, really enjoyed out of that book. I think for me, I guess that was the turning point where it started to get quite a bit darker. Mm-hmm. I love all of them, but it just...
I think the real for me was the dark it turned in the fourth book. The moment Cedric Diggory died, it became... Like, it was almost, like, downhill from there in terms of darkness. It just went and got, like, people started dying and it became real. It became more thrust into adulthood in a way and sort of the magic protection of being a child in a way. It was kind of, like, lost and then suddenly reality was kicking in.
Yeah. Well, it's funny though that the worst character for me out of all of the books is still Umbridge. Yeah.
Oh God,
she's so irritating.
You hate her more than Voldemort.
Yeah. Well, see, I don't know what it is. Voldemort, you're like, you know what? He's just not as cruel, and you don't understand where he's coming from, but it's just not completely senseless. Like Umbridge was just unnecessarily cruel.
Yeah. Like, at least Voldemort had a backstory.
Yes. You
understood that.
She just came into it.
There was a certain level of empathy that you didn't agree with it, but you were I know where you're coming from, you very, very psycho man.
Yeah.
And you were like, what would you do? What happened? Did someone hurt a kitten when you were younger?
And kittens and you like torturing children. I mean, that's just great.
They go hand in hand. I thought this was just a thing.
You have to listen to Stephen Fry doing Dolores Umbridge. Oh, it is so funny.
Oh, he would be hilarious.
I think it's on me now. I never thought of it. I never put that two and two together. Like, ooh.
Yeah, it's probably the best thing about the audiobook.
Does he do the laugh?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
That laugh is gold. Oh, all right, well, that's a plan, I think. Well, I think it's been a great chat. We might end it there, guys. But, yeah, I mean, if you're like us and you're obsessing about it, just, you know, let us know because we're always happy to chat about it on, you know, social media and let us know because we love Harry Potter, obviously, and we're so excited to see what's coming next. Thanks for listening, everyone. Join us every Wednesday at 11 a.m. for more in-depth discussions about what's hot in the book world.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.